Good evening, everybody, and Shalom Aleichem. Thank you so much for joining me as we gather together for the first in a rather long series that commences this evening, a 26-part series, which hopefully will span through several different seasons, if you will. And the concept, which hopefully is pretty self-evident at this point, is to try to take a look at 26 different topics, different areas within Torah thought and tradition, and run through as much as we can in 45 minutes or an hour many of the different issues, both in terms of hashkafa and halacha. So very much looking forward to this project with you. So tonight's topic, and hopefully at this point you realize that we are not going in alphabetical order, so we're going to start with the letter S tonight. We're going to be talking about shoes, getting off on the right foot, shoes in Jewish thought and Jewish tradition. Now, this sounds perhaps to some of you as a bit of an interesting topic, a little strange. After all, when we think about shoes, so lots of different types of shoes, big shoes, small shoes, women's shoes, men's shoes, children's shoes. I didn't know until I checked earlier that the shoe industry in the United States alone is a $91 billion industry. So it gives you a sense as to how much there is to talk about when it comes to shoes. However, from a Torah perspective, it's not clear on the surface as to what it is to discuss when it comes to shoes. After all, the fashion world may have a lot to say about shoes. People who have certain tastes and comfort levels may have what to say about shoes. But does the Torah say, really have to say all that much about shoes? So as we're going to see tonight, the answer is yes. We're going to start with the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara teaches, when a person puts on one shoes in the morning, the bracha that is recited, one of the Berachos HaShachar, Baruchatu Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, She'asali Kol Tzarki, that Hashem has made for me, has provided me with all of my needs. Now, as you know, we do not actually recite this bracha when we are home putting our shoes on, even though Medina de Gemara, the Berachos HaShachar, were recited at different points in the morning when a person got up and was taking care of their just regular routine needs as they were preparing for a new day. Later, it was instituted that we recite these brachos together when we are in shul. But yet, conceptually, Me'ikar Adin, the Gemara is presenting over here a very interesting idea, and that when one puts on one's shoes, the bracha is, thank you, Hashem. We acknowledge that you as the one who has given me everything that I need. It's a little strange, because what is it about shoes that we associate with kol tzarchi, all of my needs? So the Abu Draham, in his explanation of this Gemara, says as follows, Hatam lebracha zu, shekozman shuhu yachaf, as long as a person is walking around barefoot, and a yachal atseis v'lasos tzarachav, a person is unable to move around and to take care of their needs, v'tzarche beso, and the needs of the members of their household. V'kevan shalavash menolav, ki ilu nasa kolo kol tzarachav. Once a person has their shoes, so that they can go about their day and take care of their needs. If you need for a moment to think about what this is talking about, if you imagine waking up in the morning and wanting to pick up the newspaper from the street, for those of us who still get newspapers, if it's a perfectly warm day and the ground is dry, so maybe you could step a few feet outside in front of your house, as long as you take a good look and make sure you're not stepping on any stones or glass or who knows what. But certainly on a cold day, on a very hot day, it's going to be difficult to walk outside barefoot. And how far can you actually get? And so therefore, Chazal, trying to sensitize us to this idea that we are so blessed to have shoes, tells us that when we recite the bracha of or more specifically, we put on our shoes, we should think about this idea that Hashem furnishes us, provides us with all of our needs. Now, that's one explanation. I would like to share with you another approach, which is sort of prompted by another Gemara, which would seem on the surface maybe to contradict this brach, this Gemara. The Gemara in Shabbos Daf Kuf Chav Tes teaches in the name of Rav, Le'olam yimkar adam karos beso v'yikach minalim l'raglav. The Gemara says that a person, if necessary, should sell all of his belongings, even koros beso, which means the beams of one's house, meaning one's basic necessities, in order to buy a pair of shoes. So the impression you get from this Gemara is that shoes are the basis of our needs. There's nothing in the world that's more important than a pair of shoes. And this would seem to contradict the idea that when we put on shoes and we say, Sh'asali kol tzarki, as if to suggest that this is somehow the cherry on top. So I want to share with you a very nice explanation to understand a different approach to this idea of Sha'asa Likol Tzarki. And this comes from the Sefer Shulchan Shlomo. Shlomo Zalman Orbach summarized the view which is found in the Shalah. The Shalah quotes from the Maharshal the following idea. And that is that we find within the Bria, within the world, we find four different levels within creation. One is called Domeim, which is a reference to, we call it like sort of the stone, the earth, anything that is inanimate and anything which is without life. On top of that, we have a level which is called Tzomeach, the world of vegetation, everything that grows in the world, the grass, the flowers, the plants, the trees. Then we have a level that we call Chai, which includes the entire animal kingdom, the birds, the fish, and of course, all the animals that walk the earth. And the highest level is what we call Medaber. Medaber means a speaking being, which of course refers to mankind. So there's an idea that many of you may have heard before, that we have these four levels, right? The lowest level is the Domeim, Tzomeach, Chai, and Medaber. So the Maharshal explains something very interesting. And that is that what we have over here is not merely a hierarchy of four different levels, but specifically, each level dominates the one below. So, for example, that which grows because it derives its nutrients from the earth. The tzemach comes because of the fact that it dominates over the domain. The chai, the animal kingdom, lives off of that which grows in the world. Now, of course, we know that some animals are carnivores. They don't necessarily eat grass and trees. But on a certain level, we know that all the nutrients in the world, even the nutrients that a carnivore will get when eating meat, whatever the case may be, is coming indirectly through the tzameach, through that which is growing in the natural of the world. And finally, of course, the medaber, a human being, dominates over the chai, over the animal world, which dominates over the tzameach, which dominates over the domain. It continues the Maharshal, the area in which we see this most prominently, which it is very clear, is when a person goes ahead and removes the Or Behema, when a person goes ahead and takes the hide of an animal, and then goes, which again is a symbol of the animal kingdom, and then goes ahead and fashions it, takes that leather and fashions it into a pair of shoes, and walks on top of these shoes. That is a display of tremendous dominance over the entire world. A fascinating idea. And with this, Maharshal explains deeper insight into a pasuk which is found in Tehillim in Perches, where David HaMelech says, Mo enosh kisiv karenu, uven adam kisiv kedenu. As if to say, what can we say of man? That he is worth being remembered, that he is worth being counted. After all, in the big scheme of things, being creations of God, we are worthless. Nevertheless, says David HaMelech, "V'techasreihu mi'at melukim, v'chavod v'hadar tiatreihu." God has made us on a level which is just a little lower than the angels. He has given us a sense of splendor and kavod and honor. Tamshilehu b'masi adecha kol shata tachas reglov, and He has enabled us. He has given us the ability, the capacity to go ahead and to dominate, to rule over Masi Yadecha, all of the creations of the world, Kol Shata Tachas Raglav, literally everything under our feet. And so therefore, David HaMelech over here is conveying a very powerful idea. And that is the way that we display our dominance over the world is by walking on top of the world, but specifically, the way we understand through the Maharshal a little deeper over here, by taking the leather which comes from the hide of the animal, the chai, the kingdom of animals that live below us, so to speak, and by fashioning that into a pair of shoes and walking on those shoes, it is a display of tremendous dominance over the world. And so with this, we can understand, for example, why it is that when Moshe Rabbeinu sees HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the first time or has that moment of revelation on Har Sinai, we just read this several weeks ago, when Moshe sees the sneh, Vayomer, Hashem says to Moshe, "Al tikrav alom, don't walk any further, don't come any closer. Shal nolecham yal raglecha, remove your shoes from your feet. Ki amakom asher omid levan mas kodeshu." So one way we can understand this is the removing of the shoes is done as a sign of humility. When you are standing before God, you don't wear your shoes, because wearing shoes is a display of dominance. It shows our control over the world. It shows, wow, look how great we are. Look how powerful we are. We dominate over the entire natural world. When we are in the presence of God, He says, "Shalna alecham yaraglecha." Take your shoes off because you are standing on holy ground. Perhaps with this we could understand as well why it is that the halacha tells us that on Har Abayis, when coming to Har Abayis, to the Beis HaMikdash, it was necessary to remove one's shoes. Why do we walk around barefoot on Har Abayis? So we can understand in a very similar way, it's based on a similar idea, that when we are standing in the Har Abayis, when we are standing in the Makom HaMikdash, we are in the presence of God. And so therefore we remove our shoes as a display of humility, as if to say, although outside of this place, perhaps I have the ability to show my dominance over the entire world, when I am in this very, very special place, I'm going to remove my shoes. Perhaps we could use this as well to understand why it is that on Yom Kippur, we remove leather shoes. Now, this is interesting. It's machlokes poskim, but most poskim assume that you can wear shoes on Yom Kippur. There's no problem, even if they're comfortable shoes. But leather shoes may not be worn, right? The prohibition of ne'ilas ha'sandal applies to leather shoes. And you may think that's a little strange, because if it's merely a matter of comfort, so maybe it should be prohibited to wear all shoes, regardless of the material. But we know that the prohibition, mikra din, only applies to leather shoes. Now, why is that? So going back to this idea that we see from the Maharshal, that wearing leather shoes is a display of great dominance. On the day of Yom HaKippurim, the day in which we stand before our Kadosh Baruch Hu, on the Yom HaDin, this is not a day in which we are supposed to say, look how great we are. Look how powerful we are. Look how much we dominate. To the contrary, we stand there in a state of hachna, submitting ourselves before the Melech Malchei Amlachim. And perhaps we could also understand why an Avel, why a person who's mourning, removes their leather shoes for the same reason. We should never make the mistake to think that removing the shoes on Yom Kippur is a display of Avelus, right? Yom HaKippurim is a happy day. It's not a day of mourning. Sometimes we make that association and assume, well, just like we remove our shoes when we are available, so too on Yom Kippur, or vice versa. But that's not necessarily what it is. It could merely be that an Avel, similarly, because of life circumstances, at this moment realizes, you know, I control nothing. There really is nothing within my control. And with this, there's a very powerful pasuk in Koheles. Ein shilton b'yom amaves. On the day of death, when a person is confronting death, ein shilton, which means there is no capacity to show dominance. A person cannot display their control over anything. To the contrary, we are helpless and hopeless in the face of death. And so therefore, we see that this idea of wearing leather shoes, being again the capacity of the medaberik to control the entire natural world, everything beneath him, chai, sameach, and domeim, is a display of shlita, it's a display of dominance over the world, and so therefore, we remove our shoes when we are in a holy place, we remove the shoes on our bias, we remove our shoes on Yom Kippur, we remove our shoes when we are in a state of ravelos for the same reason. Over here, I'm just showing you that the Vilna Gaon has a very similar idea. In the interest of time, I'm not going to read this in time, but basically, a very similar concept. So with this, we can now understand why it is that perhaps we recite the bracha of She'asali Kol Tzarki when putting on our leather shoes in the morning, different than we saw from the Abu Joham before. It's not merely that, as the Abu Joham says, that when I put on my shoes, I can do everything that I need to do. So we say She'asali Kol Tzarki. But over here, it's Mamish Kol Tzarki. That look, all of my needs, as if to say, when I wake up every morning, God, you have given me tremendous, tremendous potential. I have the capacity to rule, to dominate over so much. And this idea is conveyed by wearing leather shoes. Another idea which I wanted to share with you when we are still sort of in the hashkafa phase of this conversation is found in the Sefer Tamiyam and Hagim. The Tamiyam and Hagim is a beautiful Sefer which has a collection of many, many different ideas related to customs, as you can imagine. It says, why is it that Chazal tell us, Olam yimkor adam kol mash yeshlo v'yikach min olav l'raglav, a person should sell anything and everything that he has in order to buy a pair of shoes? So he says an idea over here that at the time that Adam HaRishon sinned, so we know the Torah tells us that the earth, the ground, was cursed. Difficult to understand exactly what that means, but the Torah tells us that there was a curse that was imposed upon the earth, upon the ground. And so therefore, we wear shoes in order to separate ourselves from the ground with such curse. This is a very strange idea, somewhat of an esoteric idea, hard to really understand what it means, but on a certain level, we put on shoes as a way of creating a hefsek, a chatzitza, if you will, a separation between ourselves and the ground, which on a certain level objectively is cursed. And that's why it says, Shal na'alecha mi'araglecha. Moshe Rabbeinu, for example, and others were told to remove your shoes, when you're on Advas Kodesh, because when you're standing on holy ground, you can take off your shoes, because this particular ground is holy. And he uses this to explain why on Yom Kippur, a different reason that we saw. We take off our shoes on Yom Kippur, Because on this particular day, the klala, the cursed nature of the earth, has been removed, temporarily suspended, because of the great Kedusha of Yom HaKippurim. And with this, we can understand why it is important for us in general to wear shoes. We wear shoes. The Gemara in Pesachim teaches, Rabbi Kiva said, that there were certain instructions they gave to his son. One of them is, Atimna Menalim Miraglecha. Do not deny, do not deprive your feet, literally, of shoes. You should wear shoes. And in fact, it's found, I don't have it, I didn't put it on the sheet over here, the Raman Shulchan Aruch says, that a person should not walk around barefoot. A person should walk around wearing shoes. Now, another point I want to come back to, I shared this with you earlier, the Pasuk, that tells us in Parsha Shemos that Hashem says to Moshe, Shal Nalechem Yaraglecha. Take off your shoes, because there's a very similar Pasuk, which is found in Sefer Yehoshua. When Yeshua has a revelation, so there as well, there's an angel that appears, Sim Sar Tzava, and says to Yehoshua, Shal Na'alcha Mi'al Raglecha, Ki Amokam Ashtar Omer Lav Kodeshu. Now, it seems almost to be the exact same phrase, right? By Moshe, Shal Na'alcha Mi'al Raglecha, Ki Amokam Ashtar Omer Lav Kodeshu. By Yehoshua, Shal Na'alcha Mi'al Raglecha, Ki Amokam Ashtar Omer Lav Kodeshu. Almost word for word. But the Torah Tzmima points out that there is a difference. By Moshe, he was told, Shal ne'alecha me'al raglecha, take off both of your shoes. And by Yehoshua, so if you look very closely at the Pasuk, the Malach says to Yehoshua, Shal na'alcha me'al raglecha, take off your shoe. One of your shoe, leave the other one on. That's a little strange. Interesting diuk of the Pasuk. Why would that be? So the Torah Tzmima explains as follows. It says, the reason is because Moshe, we know, even though this was sort of the beginning of his career, he was not a young man, he was 80 years old at this point, but he had yet to really establish himself as being the leader of the Jewish people. But we know that ultimately he would achieve a great heights in terms of his own spiritual stature. And in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu, although he was and remains his entire life a human being, a baser v'dam, nevertheless, he was able to achieve certain accomplishments, feats that we cannot relate to. So for example, the Torah tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu ascends Har Sinai, he's there for 40 days and 40 nights, and he doesn't eat and he doesn't drink. That's something which seems to convey, it seems to reflect a certain idea that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to achieve a very, very high level of Kedusha, on a certain level, almost like partially removed from this world. Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately was unable to remain living with his wife, perhaps for that reason, and he was ultimately, he received one of the most fascinating accolades and attributions that we find in the entire Torah, that he was called Ish Elokim in the beginning of Parshas Zos HaBracha. And we know that he was able to communicate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu panim al panim, that there were many features to Moshe Rabbeinu's life which made him separate and distinct from everyone, even Yehoshua. Yehoshua, Chazal tell us, was sort of a reflection of the greatness of Moshe. Chazal tell us that Pnei Moshe k'pnei Chama, Pnei Yeshua k'pnei Levana. That Moshe's face was like the radiated like the sun, and Yeshua's face radiated like the moon. What that means is the moon is a reflection of the light of the sun, and as great as Yeshua was, he was merely a reflection of his Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu. And so therefore the Torah Tzmim explains, it could be that that's the secret to understanding what's going on over here. Moshe was told, Shal Nalecha, take off both of your shoes, as if to say, remove yourself of all of your physicality. That there was a certain removal, a stripping, if you will, of that which separated him from the earth, because he was ultimately going to ascend great, great spiritual heights. Yehoshua, on the other hand, while he was a very, very special, distinguished individual, and he would achieve great spiritual greatness, but nevertheless, he was told over here, remove your shoe, B'lashon Yachid, as if to suggest that he is still going to remain, at least partially, in this world. Very, very interesting idea from Baruch Epstein, Tosefes Bracha, and explaining why Moshe Rabbeinu was told to remove two shoes and Yeshua was told to remove one. Now, what I'd like to do for the second half of our shiur is talk about not shoes from the perspective of Jewish thought, which we just tried to do, but now for a little bit perspective of Jewish tradition and halacha. I want to say that there are many, many topics throughout all areas of halacha, Dalet Chelke Shulchan Aruch, which talk about shoes. I've provided over here a little bit of a sample of some which, for the most part, are most relevant and most practical. But you should know and appreciate that we said before that the shoe industry is a $91 billion industry. I'm not going to tell you there are 91 billion places in halacha in which shoes become relevant. but many, many more than that which I'm sharing with you tonight. So the first one I'd like to talk about is the order of putting on shoes. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us, the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Kitfilin Kach Menolim, says the Gemara that just like we do by tefillin, so too when it comes to shoes. How so? Matfilin b'smol, just like when it comes to tefillin, we put tefillin on our left hand. Af Menolim b'smol, so too when putting on one's shoes, one starts with the right. Now the Gemara, after presenting this opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, says, wait a second, we have a braisa which tells us that when a person puts on his shoes, he should put on the right first and afterwards the left. And then the Gemara discusses whether or not Rabbi Yochanan agreed with this braisa, whether he was aware of this braisa. It's not clear what's going on over here because we have two completely different opinions. And then the Gemara says something very interesting. Amar of Nachman Yitzchak, a yari shemayim yotze yudei shtehen. A person who is a God-fearing individual will do something to satisfy both opinions. Umanu, and who is such an individual? Marbe du Ravana, hechi yavid, what did he do? See him the imani v'lo kata. He would put on his right shoe foot, right shoe first, and he didn't tie the shoelace. And then he would put on his left shoe, and then he would tie his left shoe, and then he would go ahead and tie his right shoe, right? Right foot first, right shoe first rather, then left shoe, then you tie your left shoe, then you tie your right shoe. And Ravashi, Chazina l'Rav Kahana de lo kapid, Ravashi says, we see that Rav Kahana did not have this kapeda. Now, why is it that we put on our right shoe first, but tie our left shoe first? So Tosfos there explains the significance of tying the left shoe is because that's the association with tefillin. We know that when it comes to tefillin, tefillin are, the lashon of the Torah is, ukshartom la'osa yodecha. Even though we don't tie it each and every morning, that's not exactly what we do. There's a kesher, there's a knot that is prepared beforehand, but we fasten it, we bind it to our hand or to our arm more specifically. And so therefore, Tosfos explains, the idea over here is that since there's a special chashivas of tying associated with the left, we tie our left shoe first. Believe it or not, for those who didn't know this is actually found in Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber in Aruch Chaim Siman Beis in the very beginning of Shulchan Aruch tells us that when a person gets dressed in the morning, you should put on your right shoe first and don't tie it. Then you put on your left shoe and then you do tie it. And then you tie your right shoe. Fascinating. And the Mishnah Berurah explains, based on the idea that we saw, even though a little more he adds, the reason we put on our right shoe first is because all things being equal, we always go to the right first. That there's an inyan that in general, that whenever we can go right or left or right, all things being equal, it's not always equal. Sometimes you know you have to make a left, but then you'll make a right. And we find examples from this within the Torah. When it comes to kshira, when it comes to tying dafka, there's an inyan to do the left. Now this is a very, I don't want to say it's obscure, but this is a very, maybe not a very well-known, and a sort of a detail within Jewish law and tradition, but it's an example, it's a powerful example of how there are so many things that we can do, even getting dressed in the morning. And by the way, we're not talking about all the halachas of getting dressed in the morning, because there are many more halachas that pertain to getting dressed. But even when we put on our shoes, to put on our shoes thoughtfully and deliberately, following a certain sequence. I should point out that given the association with the mitzvah tefillin, the poskim do discuss as to whether or not this applies, let's say, to women, whether or not what a lefty does. So there are many related halachas which we're not going to review right now. Very interestingly, I found in the Sefer Brichos Eliyahu from Eliyahu Fisher that explains something very interesting. Now, this is not, I don't know if this is something that you've seen. This is not so much a halacha as much as an observation. He observes that there are many rabbanan, many rebbes, who do not tie their shoes very tightly. They put on their shoes loosely. Why is that? Mishum dehem trudim b'limudam she'enim rotzim lahafzid zman shel ataras kshiras l'kesha. Because they're very busy, they're very preoccupied with their learning, and they don't want to spend time tying or untying their shoelaces. It's something that could be a big time waster. And then he says that it's the minig of many tzaddikim v'admorim, many chassidish rebbis and tzaddikim, that they wear shoes without shoelaces. And I've given you over here two pictures that you can see. I don't know who these people are. Actually, one of them is covered by me, my face. I apologize. But pictures of rebbes who were walking around with shoes, dafka, loafers, not shoes with shoelaces. Why is that? He says, l'chor, it's a little strange. You would think that they would want to wear shoes with shoelaces because this way they could be mekayim, that which the Gemara tells us, that you put on your right shoe foot and then your left shoe, and then you tie your left first, and then you tie your right. If you are wearing shoes without shoelaces, then you can't tie your left shoe first. So why do they do this? So he suggests it could be that it's for the same reason, because they were concerned about their time. Chasim al zmanam. And so therefore, it could be that for that reason alone, the minhag of avals, that they preferred not to wear shoes with shoelace. I want to be very, very clear, because I found this to be, this is interesting and maybe even a little cute, if you will. There's no halacha that says that one is required to wear shoes with or without shoelaces. You can wear one or the other. But if you ever wondered, when you see that part of the traditional garb within certain Hasidic communities is to wear shoes without shoelaces, it could be, at least according to the Sefer Brichos Eliyahu, this is the reason. Now, when buying a pair of new shoes, there is at least one, maybe two halachas that we should keep in mind. The Rama in Or HaChaim Siman Reish Chav Gimel tells us that there's a minhag that when a person gets a new article of clothing, you should say to that person, Tivalev Tischadesh. We sometimes say Tischadesh, but Tivalev Tischadesh means you should wear it well, meaning it should get worn, it should become worn, the Tischadesh, and you should need a new one. Very interesting idea. In other words, it's like, you know, like we say to somebody, you should wear it well, use it well. So that idea, using this Nusach, Tivalev Tischadesh, is found in the Ramah. And then he says that there are those that say you shouldn't say this when it comes to shoes. Why? Because shoes are made from leather, as we pointed out, and leather comes from animals. And if you're telling somebody, Tivalev Tischadesh, you should wear this well so that you need another pair, that will warrant the need to kill another animal. And the Pasuk says, as we say every day, V'rachamav al-komasav, that Hashem has compassion on all of his creations. And so therefore, there's a certain insensitivity by telling somebody gets a new pair of shoes, Tivalev Tischadesh, you should wear it well and get a new one, because that displays a slight insensitivity towards the nevach, the animal that's going to have to be killed. V'inei atam cholosh ma'od, says Rama, this is a very, calls like a weak reason. Nevertheless, we do find that there are many who have this kepeda. So it is not an absolute halacha. This is not something which is, it's not prohibited to say such a thing. And clearly, as we know, there's nothing wrong with wearing leather shoes. There's nothing wrong with taking the hide of animals and using it for our purpose. But still, it's interesting. I think we have scheduled in a few weeks to talk about animals. There is a certain sensitivity over here that maybe we shouldn't say certain things which would imply or suggest a certain disregard for animal life. A similar machlokas that appears in the poskim as to whether or not one should say a birchas shachiyanu when getting a new pair of shoes. Generally speaking, when a person gets a beged chadash, certainly an article of clothing that's, doesn't have to be super expensive, but the type of clothing that a person doesn't purchase every day, a new pair of socks or underwear, probably not. But let's say a new suit, the minhag is to say a shachiyanu. What about a new pair of shoes? So there's a machlokas that's brought down between Rabbi Yashav, Zuchon al-Racha, and Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Arbach. So Rabbi Yashav Paskin, that new shoes, which a nice pair of shoes, not stam, I don't know, like Crocs or slippers or something like that, but a nice pair of shoes, you should recite a Shechiyonah, because again, it's a nice purchase. It makes somebody happy when you get a new pair of shoes. And just like we do when we make other nice purchases, you should make a Shechiyonah. Rabbi Zalman Orbach said that maybe one should not. And it would seem that it's based on this same concern that brought down in the Ramah as to whether or not you should say Tivalev Tischadesh to a person who has a new pair of shoes. Now, what about shoes in shul? Earlier I mentioned that the halacha is that when entering Har HaBayis, a person removes his shoes. But as we know, when we come to shul, there doesn't seem to be any prohibition of wearing shoes in shul. I'd say to the contrary. If you come to my shul and you take your shoes off, you may get some dirty looks. The Kohanim, when they go up to stand and to do the duchen and do birchas kohanim, so is accustomed to remove shoes. It's for a different reason. But generally speaking, it is proper to wear shoes in shul. And again, we would not necessarily look positively upon people who came into shul and removed their shoes. So why should there be a difference between the Beis HaMikdash, between Har HaBayis, which is a holy place, and the Beis HaKnesset, which is a Mikdash Ma'at? The Navi Yechezkel tells us it's a Mikdash Ma'at. It's a miniature temple. And there are many things that we do in shul that are meant to sort of replicate and to imitate some of the things that we did in the Beis HaMikdash. So over here you have a couple of paragraphs from the Sefer Eretz HaTzvi, Rav Schechter's Sefer, and over here this is part of a broader conversation that's happening here about the laws of Beis HaKnesses. It's a very interesting idea that Rav Schechter introduces over here from the Rav. Beautiful idea that I wanted to share with you. It's a little bit of a tangential point, but it does relate to the question of why we do wear shoes in shul. And that is that while it is true that a shul is a mikdash ma'at, it is a place in which we connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu just like we did in the Beis HaMikdash, nevertheless, there is a fundamental difference. That the mikdash is what's called Beis HaShem, it is the house of God, whereas a Beis HaKnesses, a shul, that is our home, but it's our home that we use to invite the Shekhinah. So we meet, we connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beis HaKnesses, whereas the Beis HaMikdash is his home, so to speak, with the capital H, and we go to visit him. Over here, the Beis HaKnesses is ours. And this is a basis for the Gemara is ruling in Maseches Brachos, Daf Samach Gimel, in the name of Rava, that when determining what is permissible and what's prohibited in shul, we say ki beso, just like one's home. Ba beso, just like in one's home, kapandaria, for example, which means using one's home as a shortcut. I would not be okay with a stranger who would come to my house and just use it as a shortcut. Somebody wants to get quickly to the neighbors, so he cuts through my house, walks through the living room, the kitchen, goes out the back door. That is something that people are makbid. In my own house, you don't use it for a shortcut. However, if somebody wants to come into my house wearing his shoes, that's okay. I'm not makbid. So the Gemara uses that as a way of determining what is and is not acceptable in shul. If you would do this, if you would allow this sort of activity in your own home, then it's okay in shul. Very interesting idea. And so therefore, based on this, Rav Shachter goes on to say that the Rav thought that when it comes to people who, let's say, come in during the winter, or if it's raining outside and wearing boots, and the boots are very wet, and let's say there's a lot of snow, when they come into shul, they shouldn't walk into the shul and just go ahead and drag the snow into the shul. You should either clean your shoes beforehand, or brush them off beforehand, or shake them out well before you walk into the shul, certainly into the sanctuary. Why? Because most people are makbid in their own homes not to do this. It's a very interesting idea that we treat the shul in a way that we treat our own homes. Now again, if you happen not to care about your home, and you're not makbid on anything, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to be the way you should act in shul. But when sort of defining the rules for everybody, we look at it, as the Gemara says, ki beso. Now, when it comes to washing one's hands, here as well, we find a very interesting halacha in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch. Simen Dalet, Eilu Dvarim Tzrichin Atila B'mayim. The Mechaber over there gives a whole list of things that a person, after which, or when one is doing, they have to wash their hands. So, for example, it says if a person cuts their nails, gets a haircut, and goes to a funeral, and gives blood. These are all examples of things that a person should wash their hands. And one of them is hacholeitz min olav, that a person goes ahead and removes his shoes. Now, why is this? So the Mishnah Berurah explains it should be obvious, because when you touch your shoes, your hands get dirty. And so therefore, he says that this is not a netila that's done for spiritual reasons. This is not to remove what we come sometimes call the ruach ra, some sort of evil spirit. This is done for cleanliness. And so therefore, you should wash your hands. And he says, based on that, you don't have to do so immediately thereafter. When you get around to doing it, you should do it. But the idea is you should wash your hands, it says in Shulchan Aruch, it's proper etiquette and just a way to stay clean and stay healthy when you remove your shoes. Based on this, of course, the post can discuss, well, what if you touch a new pair of shoes? And what if you're trying on shoes in the store, and what about touching the shoelaces, and what about touching the upper part of the shoe? So, of course, these are all some of the related conversations that you find in the poskim. But according to Mishnah Berurah, this is a netila that is not mishum ruach ra'a, but rather it is to have clean hands. But the Piskei Tshuva brings down over here, there are those who felt otherwise, that actually the requirement to wash one's hands is because this is related to the concept of ruach ra, and based on this, what's the difference afterwards? You're going to wash your hands. What's the difference? What the reason is? So there is an idea that we wash our hands, for example, in the morning when we wake up. So it is customary to wash your hands. There are different customs as to how exactly one does it, but we do it what we call the seirgin, right? We wash your hand three times, usually on each hand, and we do a seirgin, right? Start on one hand, then the next, we go back and forth. That is not a method that we use because it is a way to remove. Because it maximizes cleanliness. We use that method because that is associated with the removal of ruach ra. These are obviously mystical ideas, and we are taught, we have a tradition that the way we remove ruach ra is doing it following this particular sequence, this exact order. That's how we do it. And so therefore, the sort of a nafkamina over here, if you say that we wash our hands when we're removing our shoes because our hands are dirty, it doesn't really make a difference how you wash your hands. Just stick them under the water and clean them. Or perhaps if I only use one hand, then I only have to wash one hand. But if you say it's mishum ruach ra'a, so then maybe it is necessary to do it in the more I'll say the more elaborate form, like when we do when we wake up in the morning. Either way, you're not going to make a bracha. You don't make a bracha when you wash your hands after removing shoes. What about shoes and Shabbos? So what do shoes have to do with Shabbos? So over here, there are so many different things to possibly mention. So I've just recorded just a bunch of them, just naming the issues. Tying shoes. Obviously, one of the Lamates Melachos, one of the 39 prohibited areas of Melacha on Shabbos is tying knots. Now, how do we define a kshira on a Torah level? What is considered to be a kesher that is going to be prohibited either on a Torah level, midi rabbanon? So this is a big discussion. It depends on the type of the knot. It depends on the intention when making the knot, how long it is supposed to be tied, and maybe, in fact, it depends on how long, in fact, it was tied. So these are all considerations. But suffice it to say that there are certain types of knots that a person cannot, excuse me, no pun intended, cannot make on Shabbos, and therefore you have to know beforehand what type of knot is acceptable. According to most posts, can we generally assume that Ashkenazim should not make what we call a double knot, right? So a double bow. A single bow is okay, especially if it is your intention to untie it within 24 hours, which most people do. I guess putting on a pair of shoes, most people are going to do so. When it comes to inserting laces, this is another interesting discussion in the postgame. Inserting shoelaces for the first time into a pair of shoes, let's say you got a new pair of shoes, and you didn't have a chance to lace them up. So you're going to do so on Shabbos for the first time. That could be potentially an iser, the araisa of what we call makeb apatish, right? Which involves taking something which is not yet fit for use, something which is not yet functional, and doing something which makes it functional for the first time. That's one of the lamates melachos. It's a different melacha. Inserting laces, nothing to do with kshira. And so therefore, if the shoe becomes untied and a couple of the laces fall out, a couple of the holes, so as long as the holes are big enough and it doesn't involve a very, very special, precise surgical procedure of any sorts, then there's nothing wrong with inserting laces that fell out. But to put laces into shoes for the first time, that could be a problem on Shabbos. Polishing shoes, obviously, this is problematic. The post can discuss, but that's something you shouldn't do. The removal of dirt, if a person's coming in from the outside and has a lot of mud, and let's say dry mud on their shoes, so this is another thing that's discussed. And another interesting conversation, which many of us probably never think about because most of us are living in a place where there's an Eruv, but wearing shoe covers, like the rubber covers that people put on top of the shoes, where there is no Eruv, that's another discussion that the post can have. Probably it's mutter. But in other words, we're allowed to wear clothing, but how would we view something which is there merely to cover our clothing? In this case, the shoe cover, in a case where there is no Eruv. So these are some of the areas in Halacha regarding shoes which come up when it comes to Shabbos. Shoes after death. What exactly that mean? Well, we're not talking about what happens to shoes after they die. I could make a joke right now about what happens to shoes after they die and how their souls go up to heaven, but I won't make that joke because that would be too punny. But anyway, we're talking over here not about what happens to shoes after they die, but what happens to the shoes of a person who died. So there is an idea that some of you may be familiar with. I'm always fascinated by how many people have heard of this idea. It's brought down in the Sefer Hasidim. It says over here that there was a certain person who, after he died, they wanted to give his shoes away to an ani, to a person who didn't have, to a poor person. And this individual was reprimanded, was told, don't do that. After all, the pasuk says, v'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, that you shouldn't give the shoes of a dead person to somebody else. The pasuk says, v'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, and this is something which could lead to danger, some sort of sakana. It's not clear what the sakana is over here, but here it says actually it's okay to sell them to a non-Jew. So in the Sefer Divrei Sofrim brings down the many assume that the sakana over here is more of a mystical sakana. It's not an actual danger, because of course you wouldn't be able to do something which would be hazardous or dangerous to a non-Jew. So it seems that this is something which is a little more mystical. If you want, you can go ahead and sell it to a non-Jew and then take the money and give it to a non-Jew. This is an idea that's brought down in the Sefer Hasidim. However, many poskim, I have over here a quote from the Sefer Zichron Meir, and in the next page from Ravad Yosef and the Sefer Yabbi Omer, point out that this is not so mikubal, this is not so pasha. First of all, there are many questions that are raised. One of them is, Tzvi Pesach Frank suggests that there's actually a mistake in the printing of the Sefer Hasidim. When it says the shoe of one who, of a mace, it's really referring to a Gemara in Chulin, which speaks about Minel Shamesa, shoes which come from the leather of an animal that died on its own. Meaning if an animal, let's say, was sick and died, so there may be concern about taking that hide. It's not clear what the concern is. The Gemara has two opinions. It could also be, again, like we said before, somewhat of a concern of sakana, but it doesn't appear that this is necessarily a reference at all to this idea that a person should not wear shoes that belong to a person who died. It could also be, Rav Yosef brings down, that many suggest that this only applies to the shoes that a person was wearing when they actually died. I've never, you know, taken a poll, but most people don't die with their shoes. Most people die in bed. There obviously are exceptions, but generally speaking, people are not wearing shoes anyway when they die. But if one was wearing shoes when he died, so maybe there's an idea from the Sefer Hasidim not to give those shoes to somebody else. Rav Yosef points out that many poskim say, you know, we have a bigger concern over here about tashchis. Just go ahead and take shoes and throw them out and to say that we can't use these. That could be a problem of just wasting something that is otherwise valuable. And also when it comes to things that are brought down on Sefer Hasidim, there's a question in general as to whether or not these are laws that are binding, whether or not this is something that applies to everybody, or maybe only the descendants of Yudah Chassid. So there are many, many reasons why the poskim basically say this is not a problem. Believe it or not, as I said before, I get questions from time to time. People who are looking to give away some parts of the wardrobe of a person who passed away, there's nothing wrong with doing that. You can take clothing, you can even take shoes. I don't know how many people want to wear somebody else's shoes, but Mikir Adin, there is nothing wrong with giving the shoes away when a person dies. What about shoes and transactions? What does that mean? So here's very interesting. There's a pasuk in Megillas Rus. Maybe some of you remember this pasuk. The pasuk says, this is in the fourth chapter, which is the last chapter of Megillas Rus. The story is told of Boaz and Ploni Almoni, and they're engaging in some sort of transaction. And the pasuk says over there, Vizos lifanim b'Yisrael. And this was already in yesteryear, the way it has always been done in the nation of Israel, that there's an idea over here that when engaging in some sort of transaction, it's not clear whether it's applied to all transactions or not, but as a way of displaying one's gemiras das, one's intention to sell something, to purchase something, to commit to something. So one of the things that was done was the removal of the shoe. The removal of the shoe signifies that idea. The Talmud Yerushalmi, in fact, tells us that even though the kinyanim that we use today, so when we think about marriage, for example, we speak kesef, shtar, and, well, in that case, bia, but over here it mentions kesef, shtar, chazaka, so those are kinyanim that we use when it comes to, let's say, purchasing karka. Originally, b'rishano ha'yukonim b'shlifas ha'min'al. It was involved the removal of the shul, of the shoe. As the pasuk says, "Vazos lifnim b'Yisrael." So you see that historically, shoes were used as a way of engaging in a transaction, the purchase of property, the sale of property, whatever the case may be. We don't do this today. You don't see this today. But again, this is an idea that we find in our tradition that shoes were used in transactions. And finally, some of you probably are expecting that this would make it to the sheet tonight. When it comes to chalitza, the Torah tells us, of course, that when a person dies childless, his surviving widow is to be married by his brother. That's the mitzvah of Yibum. But we know that in a situation where the brother does not want to marry her, so then he performs what's called chalitza. Today, everybody in this situation would do a chalitza, and while a chalitza is not a common occurrence, it does actually, you know, happen even today. There are times that there are chalitzas today. The chalitza involves, the Torah tells us, I'll call it a ceremony of sorts. It's, it's like everything else. You know, the Torah presents over here something which seems very simple on the surface, but rather complicated in halacha. B'niksha yivimto elav le'enei hazkenim. So the surviving brother is going to go ahead and go to his brother's wife in front of this kenim. V'cholzana alo mi'al raglo. She is going to remove the shoe from his foot, v'yarka b'fanav, and spit before him, v'ansa v'amra kacha yeyaseh li'isha she'lo yivneh es beis achiv. It seems as if he is being called out publicly for failure to go ahead and to fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum, for not doing his part in building, in continuing to preserve the house, literally, of his brother. And this involves, as I mentioned, a special shoe, a chalitza shoe. There are several pictures over there. One of them is a picture. The one on the left is actually Rav Henkin's chalitza shoe that apparently he used. This is found in some museum. And the other one is one from Rav Salant of Yerushalayim, earlier than Rav Henkin, maybe a little more than 100 years ago. So here you have chalitza shoes. Obviously, they don't look like regular shoes. They're very, very specific details regarding a chalitza shoe, the entire process of chalitza. I looked in the Encyclopedia Talmudit in preparation for tonight's year, and there must have been 10, 15 pages of just Mar Makomos on the topic of chalitza sanal, how chalitza works, and the shoe and what the shoe looks like. So this is another area of halacha in which, of course, there's what to say about shoes. So that is, I don't want to say that's all one can say about shoes, but all we're going to say about shoes tonight. So there you have it, shoes in Jewish thought and tradition. Next week, at this time, we will talk about while you were sleeping, what dreams really mean. So we're going to go from shoes, which of course is the letter S, to what dreams really mean, going to D. That will bring us two letters, and then we'll have 24 Bezu Hashem to go. So thank you so much for joining me tonight. Hope you enjoyed the shiur. Look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you.